listeners, this is Susan King, and we're here with Virginiology and Spirit Connect, and some new music. I'm a steel drummer on the side, and I thought I might share some of my favorite sounds with you as we go into the next hour. There we go. I am so excited today. I have one of my favorite coaches online with me today. She doesn't know how favorite she is. I had an opportunity to work with her in Tampa in 2007 after going through my near-death experience, and have been on a course for these many years, I guess now, since then, to learn more about my past and learn more about me. Denise Lynn is probably one of the best kept secrets in our world, I believe. She has been, for 3.5 decades, been traveling all over the world and speaking to standing room audiences. And it started out with her spiritual journey of a near-death experience, which she may want to share with you. But her revelations have really turned into some powerful, powerful books. There are 15 of them, unbelievable material, and they've been translated in 26 languages, and she's actually been a featured guest on Oprah, Lifetime, Discovery, BBC, NBC, and CBS. Denise, welcome.
I am so excited
to have you here, and before we get going, I am going to go ahead and let the audience know that we're going to open up the lines, because there's going to be, I think, a lot of questions, or I hope there will be a lot of questions. And the toll-free number is 888-815-9756. When we first met via email about the topic of my show on Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect, you were very excited because one of your early books really was written on this subject about how to clear out some of the baggage that we carry with us from our ancestors. And that book has kind of taken on several iterations and titles, has it not?
Yeah, it started out being called Descendants because I thought I had the idea that for us to clear out all that old stuff and not pass it on to our descendants, both our biological descendants and our spiritual descendants, I guess you could say. And then it got changed to Sacred Legacies. And now the latest title is Four Acts of Power. Just the publishers, I guess they just think they like to reinvent the book and get me to do rewrites and give it a different name. But the information is pretty much the same. It's how can we clear the legacy, both, you know, the negative legacy, I guess, that we've kind of absorbed from our ancestors so we don't pass it on into the future. So you're right. I was so excited when we connected because you are in a field that I'm just passionate about.
Well, you know, I know as a genealogist for 27 years, and, yeah, there's your other book on past lives and present miracles also is very intriguing, and so is soul coaching because, you know, as a genealogist, you know, we tend to collect clutter. And we also collect dead people, and we also collect ancestors more so than others. And, you know, I tend to believe in most cases that those of us who actually do this kind of research may actually get ourselves bogged down a little bit more than perhaps the normal person would, because we begin to learn more and more and more about an individual and their lives, and as we do, we take it in, and I really tend to think that. Really curious about your feelings on that subject.
Well, I'm not sure if this is addressing what you just said, but I do think what you do is really important, and I'm of Native American heritage on my mother's side. I'm Cherokee, and in Native cultures, there's that idea of the, it's an oral tradition, but part of the oral tradition is to pass down the stories of the ancestors. So what you're doing, to me it's not clutter, to me it's, you are honoring an ancient and sacred tradition. And there's value in it, because based on what our ancestors have gone through, we can use that information in our own lives. So my sense is that less than clutter, more what you're doing is really being of support, not just to yourself and your own family and friends, but to so many others, and honoring this ancient tradition.
Well, I probably was thinking of two things at the same time, because as genealogists, we tend to collect more clutter.
Clutter. Okay, one of my other favorite subjects. I could go on about clutter. I call clutter clearing modern day alchemy. But what was the other thing? I'm sorry for interrupting you.
That's okay. Go on. When we research, we tend to collect all this material. And I know, for example, 27 years, I have several file cabinets full, and it is clutter. And you know, it's research that I've done perhaps, 25 years ago, 27 years ago, that I probably haven't looked at. And I think it all begs to the same concept that clearing the clutter in our lives will help us clear the blockages. For example, and I guess where my tone was going on that is, by clearing out the clutter I have in my file cabinets on genealogy, I may indeed be able to break through some blockages on some of the lines that I've been working on, because I haven't looked at it in 20-some-odd years, perhaps. And it's all part and parcel of that concept, I thought.
Well, if my philosophy is, if you don't use it and you don't love it, get rid of it, because it is bogging your life down. And if you haven't looked at that stuff in 27 years, it's probably time to move it out. Now, what happens, and this almost always happens, I'll let you know it's going to happen, is that person who hasn't looked at something in 15, 20 years, they get rid of it. They hear me talk about clutter, and I said I'm passionate about clutter. I've written a lot about it. The very next day, they need it. Now, and they say, Denise, I don't understand it. I didn't need it for 20 years. I got rid of it. The very next day, I needed it. This is actually very common, and it's because there's almost like there's this sub-personality inside of us that's kind of like our little fearful being inside there. And that little fearful being, it's kind of in this survival mode. And so when you get rid of it, it's like, no, you can't let it go. You can't let it go. You might need it. And that is a negative affirmation for the future. Because if you are keeping something now, because you have enough now, you haven't needed it, but someday in the future you might need it, you are actually affirming that you are going to have a lack in the future, if that makes sense. So that little sub-personality will subconsciously, and you'll think, I had nothing to do with it, will come up with a reason why that you had to keep it. But if you know that's going to happen, it's less likely to happen. And if you're keeping something because you think that someday in the future you might need it, like you haven't needed it for 20 years, but you might, it literally, and I know I just said that, but it is, you are affirming a sense of lack. You are affirming that you are not going to be enough or have enough in the future, and that's a good enough reason to get rid of it.
I'm beginning to see that. It's terrible. When I started reading your soul coaching book, I got stuck in the first chapter, and I don't know how do you advise people to begin to let go of some of the stuff that we seem to collect, whether it's papers or things or ancestors.
Well, here's what I suggest. Yeah, so these are papers, and this is important. This is your profession, genealogy. So sometimes you have to do things in little tiny chunks. So if you took digital photos of all those papers, and you just took, and then that way you know you've got them if you ever need them, because sometimes we need to feel like, well, what if I need them and they're irreplaceable? Well, you take photos of them, so you have the information. But then then you back it up, and so you can physically get rid of the papers, but you still have the information. So it's taking a step, so it doesn't feel quite as scary. Some people say, but I have all these antiques and these heirlooms that have been passed down for generations, but they feel like they're clogging my life, and I have to dust them, and it's like, do your objects own you or do you own the objects? what I tell them is take a photo of them. Keep the memories, but you don't have to keep the thing, you know, and, or you can make a collage out of those pictures. There's a lot of creative ways that you can clear the clutter without completely letting go where it feels kind of frightening, you know, like somehow you're losing something.
Now, one of the things that, you talk about is by, getting rid of that clutter, it really begins to create miracles in your life. And I hear this from people all the time, and I actually see it happening with me as I begin to unload small things, one thing at a time. When I unload something, it seems that I get something back even bigger and better. And it's part of manifesting, isn't it?
Well, it's what I call modern-day alchemy. If you want to transform your life, change your life, enhance your life, start working on your clutter. And take a look at the area of your life that you might need the most help in. People who need help with finances right now, start clearing out anything that represents finances, old bills, old receipts, old, check stubs that are 20 years old. Clear out anything to do with finances. I love feng shui, too, so I suggest that people clear their clutter in the part of their home that has to do with their finances, which, as you're looking at your front door, that's the part of your house that is the furthest back to the furthest left of your house. But whatever area of your life you are wanting to clear, start with that clutter. If you're working on your relationship, start with the bedroom. Bedroom's a really important room to clear that clutter out. And it seems to work like magic. You think, how can this make a difference? If you want to work with health, take a look at what are those health issues and see if there aren't metaphors in the home. People who have eye problems in feng shui, the windows usually represent eyes. So, and again, feng shui doesn't make any sense. How could that possibly? How could the windows have anything to do with eyes? But I always say try it. If it doesn't work, don't do it anymore. But sometimes, this ancient wisdom has some credibility. When there's a whole bunch of junk in the windows and they're dirty and the screens are torn and the curtains are always closed, you might clear the clutter around the window. If you're having circulation problems and your hallways have a whole lot of clutter in them, that can be a reflection of that clogging of the arteries, if you will. Those are the arterioles within the home. So there's a lot of symbology like that. And the thing is, it's weird, but it works.
You've given me a couple of ideas specifically for me, because there are some health issues that I've had problems with, and I never thought of it that way. So really what we're saying is that to open everything that we want to have open to us, then, we have to take a look, and then we have to start getting rid of the things that may be in our way of manifesting those dreams and those wishes and where we want to go. I know it's a tough time for a lot of people, and there are opportunities out there, no matter how negative the press seems to want to make us see things. And I know that from my experience that I've seen incredible changes in my environment as I begin to make those kinds of changes. Getting back to the world of genealogy, because I did digress and I apologize for that, we all seem to... Let me take a couple steps back. I've been proclaiming genealogy to be a soul journey. And, one of the reasons I proclaim that, and I think that it's probably second nature to many of us, is that, by learning about who we came from and our ancestors, we actually do begin to learn more about ourselves. And, we tend to learn why, our parents did what they did and perhaps why they treated us the way they treated us, if they mistreated us or if they didn't mistreat us. And, going back generationally, there's a pattern there as I see it. And as we, as individuals, and especially in this particular age, we have an opportunity to, I see it, and perhaps you can give us some insight, to really be able to begin a forgiveness process, to open up those channels and really help ourselves get rid of whatever it is that we seem to have carried on from, you know, generationally. I believe that maybe, you know, even a generation back didn't really have some of the opportunities to do that that we do.
You know, I think that we are but a young sprout on an old root, and I really, as I said before, really honor the work that you're doing, because in ancient cultures and native cultures especially, the lineage was always so important, and it's only been in this last, you know, modern age, if you will, that people are, they're mostly just conscious of their parents and their grandparents. They're not aware of, you know, that lineage that goes back thousands of years. And they definitely don't carry on the idea of the oral tradition. But what I found was so interesting, and I love when you're talking about forgiveness, is in the research that I did about genealogy was research done with people who were separated from their family at birth. And of course there's, you know, there's a predisposition to those people being in similar occupations, if you will. But what I found fascinating, they also found that there was a propensity towards the same religion, even if they didn't know the religion of their parents, which gives credence to the idea that there's almost like a psychic lineage as well as a genetic lineage, and that perhaps they are interwoven within the genes. But the first step, and this is what you do, which is so wonderful, is to get people first to discover, what is my lineage? Either if you're adopted or if, you know, you're not, like, what is my lineage? What were these people? Where do any of the echoes of the past, where do they dwell in me? And the first step is to forgive yourself and to, you know, unconditionally accept, well, you know, this is who I am. You do what you can to make amends, but then you get on with life. But then to go back and also see if not only are there any patterns that have visited from the past that are visiting you, but also to see if there's any need for you to go back and forgive those who have gone before you, with the understanding that they were just doing the best they could given their programming, just like, you know, you're doing the best given your programming, your parents, your upbringing, your experiences.
Now, when you say psychic lineage, would you kind of maybe refer that to spiritual DNA, perhaps?
I would definitely. It is kind of a spiritual DNA, but I'm almost feeling like it's interwoven in the genes. I mean, it's not outside of that, because it does, because of the work that was done with twins, which I think, with people who were adopted at birth.
Right. And you know, I mean, I might understand that more because I have both an adopted mother and an adopted brother. And
wow.
So, you know, I've lived these lives, and, you know, my mother was tormented with it, and my brother could care less.
Yeah.
You know, he is who he is, and he knows who he is, and it doesn't affect him one iota, you know, and doesn't care to know, because he knows who he is. So it's really interesting how people do, you know, take on these kinds of things, and they keep them the rest of their life. I mean, I can tell you that my mother was tormented till her death, that she was abandoned. And even though I was trying to work on finding her natural lineage right before she died, because she had asked me to do that, I wasn't able to give her the information that I had found, which, you know, I give it to her now. She knows.
That's fascinating. So you were able then to trace through the work that you've done your grandparents.
Let's
her parents.
I have, to a point. I have the name.
Wow.
And you know, and on another note, is I haven't spent a whole lot of time on it because it wasn't as important to me as I felt it was to her.
Uh-huh.
And because I know who I am. I mean, she was the one that was adopted. And while, you know, I do want to do it, I got a little sidetracked in
because
my...
these are your biological grandparents, is that right? Because you're her biological daughter,
that's
your mother?
That's correct. So they would be my... I mean, you know, I've laughed for many years as one of the leaders in the genealogy field, so that I have not been able to get past my my natural mother.
You know, I have the feeling that will be an amazing odyssey of the heart.
It will be.
You know, I could be wrong, but it could be that one of the reasons you're in genealogy is for that link. And even though on one hand it, you know, might not be important, it might be. And you might not know that until you actually trace it and at the end of the line go, no, wasn't important, or oh my God, this allows me to understand so much.
It does. And I mean I believe that. And I have done some research. You know, I've reached a brick wall, and I had my natural brother tested, DNA tested, actually, for the mitochondrial DNA, and we are connecting with a lot of people.
Wow.
I just can't find anybody that's willing to admit to the scandal of the, you know, 1929, you know, child out of wedlock. But one of these days, that to me is really my where I believe my breakthrough is going to come. I have traced the census records. The father's not named. I have some hunches. The next census may be a telling tale for me. And I've got to wait, another year or two, I think, before that's released. So in the meantime, you know, you move on. I mean, you know, we go through, the census records are released every 10 years, and the 1930 census has been out, you know, since about, you know, 2000. So 2010, we should have the release of the 1940 census.
Wow.
So,
That's exciting.
In a lot of cases, we do get stuck. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking about before we were going to have this chat today is I've actually been doing some private research work for some clients recently that I haven't really done in a long time. And I had a major breakthrough with one of the clients just yesterday, actually. And the spirituality of finding this information for this particular individual just was so important to him and made it so important to me. He was a 9/11 responder, and he had not been able to get past his grandfather, and he wanted to be able to leave information to his children that was not left to him. And we actually not only found his grandfather, but we've gone back 3 and 4 generations on both sides in a matter of minutes. So he is so excited, and it was just an overwhelming release for me as well. Which brought me, actually, Denise, to this clutter concept, because he'd been doing this research for quite some time. And, you know, I think that sometimes when we do our own genealogy, that we get cluttered in our own minds as to what we're looking for. And, you know, a fresh person taking a look took very little time. I think it took me maybe 5 hours to, you know, break that barrier for him. And it took a little doing. It wasn't, you know, right in front of my face. I mean, I had to search two sides of the family to find a place. And once I found that place, I was able to find some roots of the grandfather. So it's kind of a whole, it's an interesting process to get involved in genealogy. It's almost like being a private investigator. But, you know, I sometimes wonder when we all get down to, as genealogists, into our brick walls, and in fact, I've actually, may consider doing a workshop on that, is clearing the clutter of our minds. And that maybe by doing that, we might have that little glimmer of hope as to what we need to research to maybe break through that brick wall. I think that there's just so much more to all of this than just meets the eye. So it is interesting because, I mean, you know, not so many of us, and then you get into the Holocaust research too, which I'm very familiar with, and there's very little information. So, and there's very little that's been passed down. So, you know, it's a
There's very little information about the Holocaust Holocaust ancestors.
Yes.
Oh, that surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, more and more is coming out, and I mean, I spent a good part of 20 some odd years trying to make that happen, but you know, when people came over here, families were disconnected, they changed their names, there was no record of any Jews in communities other than memorials, books that were written by the people that were able to escape. There's lots of material, but it's never seen the light of day. So those, you know, that have been doing Holocaust work or need to, you know, have had family that were in Eastern Europe and in Europe during that period of time, it gets very, very complicated, and it's not as easy to find. As far as your Native American, I've seen a lot of people who are looking for help in that area, and you mentioned something earlier about the verbal oral communications that
oral tradition, passing down the stories of the ancestors night after night after night. So they really lived in the souls of everybody, and I think that gave people a sense of continuity and a sense that they were standing on the shoulders of those who had gone before them. And I think it gave them a sense of almost confidence that they weren't alone, that they were a part of this lineage. But if anyone, you know, the Cherokees, my tribe, are actually fantastic with genealogy. And they have their own website. And I mean, the Cherokee, there's over 600 different tribes, listed tribes in the United States. And there's lots that, you know, aren't listed in the official government records. But some tribes are a lot better than others in tracing genealogy. But if anyone's listening who's a Cherokee, the Cherokees are really good. They've got a really good system of, you know, allowing people to find their roots.
And, you know, the other thing, too, that I remember, you know, reading about, and I don't know how this, if it's still very, you know, prominent, is the Indian burials, is that they bury on top of each other. Is that still, or was that, or did I dream that up?
Well, you know, there's over 600 tribes, and they all have different traditions. So I'm not aware. I mean, it could be. I'm not aware. And even the Cherokees have the Eastern Band and the Western Band. They got divided during the Trail of Tears. But so I'm not aware of that with Cherokees. It might be true. But there are so many different tribes, and they have such different traditions.
And when you talk about in your book, The Four Acts of Personal Power, you mention really that, you know, for so many of us, we, you know, are perpetuating emotions and issues that we've inherited, and in some cases may really not know where they came from directly. And you know, is there any guidance that you could give any of us on you know, steps that we really could take to open up those pathways so that we can really look forward and live happy lives and not feel like we live repressed because of some of these things that just seem to be there and we don't even know where they came from in a lot of cases. I mean, it's really kind of interesting how I've seen over the course of I've seen over the course of doing this show that I believe that my panic attacks that I had in 1987 were directly related to my beginning genealogy, because there was never any medical, they couldn't find anything wrong with me, but I kept having them.
Oh, so you feel like you were more or less opening a path to the past?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Usually I find that by opening the kind of the portal to the past, that it tends to be healing because it tends to allow things to move up to the surface to be skimmed off. I mean, it's so fascinating what you call spiritual DNA. Did you know that the Japanese after World War II, the people who had never even been there for the bomb, have a strong reaction to X-rays? So it wasn't that they were there. It wasn't like a medical condition. It was just almost like something psychic that passed down. And I've worked with twins that were adopted at birth and found that they would, you know, work in the same, you know, the same profession. They'd get married to the, you know, at the same time. They would have a child at the same time that hurt their foot at the same time. And they know, how do they know except that there is some kind of this spiritual DNA, if you will, some kind of psychic lineage that is working through them. So I find that interesting, that, and it could be maybe whatever was coming up for you wasn't so much something that was new, but maybe something that was buried inside of you, and simply opening that gateway to the past was allowing it to come up so it could be released.
And it is exactly what happened, because it lasted for 2 or 3 years and disappeared.
Wow.
And, you know, I can directly relate it to that time period. It happened at exactly the same time. And I never thought about it that way. I mean, but I always wondered why suddenly I started having these things. I mean, it was a sudden start, and it lasted for maybe a year and a half to 2 years, and then it went away as suddenly as it came.
Well, you know, there's a lot of research being done in France on something called the ancestor syndrome, which I find fascinating. And I remember reading this story that was in one of these research studies from this French professor. And there was this young girl, she was, I don't know, about 13, and she was walking in the snow, and she fell in the snow, and I mean, I think it was in Germany, but she fell in the snow, and there was a metal spike that was on one of those cast iron gates or something. Anyway, it impaled her lower abdomen area, and it ruptured her hymen. And so when she was in the hospital, her mother was getting more and more and more upset, and her mother couldn't even be in the room with her because she was so upset. And it turned out that when that mother was that same age and that same area, her mother had been attacked and raped, but she'd never told anybody. And it was almost like this pattern, this psychic pattern that she'd never told anyone, the daughter did not know, but somehow it had been passed on to her, and it manifested in a way that her hymen was torn. It was in the same place, same age. There are things that we have no way of knowing about consciously, and yet they do pass down through that ancestral line. The good thing is you can heal it. And one of the fastest ways to heal any of this is to just get very relaxed, go into that deep, relaxed state, and you can almost imagine that you're stepping back into your mother, for example, and then stepping back into your grandmother, and then into your great-grandmother. You can actually follow each lineage line back. And as you do, kind of wash that relationship with I don't know, the waters of forgiveness and acceptance, and just, you know, you can even just imagine you're saying to each person, and it's not the people that are long dead, it's the people that dwell inside of you, because our ancestors dwell inside of us. Their voices can be continued to be heard. So you can just, it's simple visualization, and it seems like, how could that make a difference? But it actually can. Just simply imagining that you're going back and talking. You can talk to, you know, and say, hey, anything you want me to know, and you know, I know you did the best you can. Another technique is to just visualize you got these big shears and you're just cutting the ties that bind. If there's any ancestral patterns that are living in you, you can just imagine these kind of magical big scissors and you just cut them. Just, you know, and it seems like, well, that's just a meditation. But the human psyche responds powerfully and sometimes instantly to symbolic acts. Which is why ritual and ceremonies have been so evident throughout time. It's because they work. So sometimes these seemingly symbolic acts, such as visualizing these big scissors, and if you see any lines, and usually they look like kind of like ribbons or cords from, you know, from the past that kind of are, you know, attaching into you, and you cut them, and it's metaphorical and it's symbolic, but so are those scissors, metaphorical and symbolic, but you know, the worst that happens is you've meditated for a little bit and you haven't really haven't cost you anything. And the best that happens is you can begin to not allow those negative patterns to weave their way through your life and then go beyond you.
And, you know, and I think it's so important, too. And, I mean, everybody's talking about how our younger generations are coming up in a way that they're got a whole lot more information being bombarded on them at early ages. I mean, I've seen things on TV with, you know, three-year-olds typing at a computer, which is
scary. I've seen three-year-olds get up, turn the computer on, and start typing. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's a brand new world.
But, you know, and the fact that they seem to be much more aware than our generation. Our generation, actually, we were more aware, in my opinion. I think we were more aware than we wanted to allow ourselves to believe. You know, when we go back to the 60s and that whole love, peace movement, I think we were trying to get there. And I don't know whether it was our parents' generation that didn't want us to get there yet, but it sounds like, and it seems, having, you know, that the kids today are a lot more open and aware. And, you know, and I think that they and us have an opportunity to break through a lot of the stuff that can make their lives a whole lot happier and, you know, free and, you know, pretty much allow them to go in directions that perhaps we never would allow ourselves to go. And I think that probably is a very exciting thing. And I think that, you know, we, working with, you know, the descendants in the earlier generations, really have an opportunity to psychically, maybe, I guess that's an interesting term, to you know, allow them to grow and free themselves in ways that our generation really have held on to not doing. That's how I feel. I sense that while we want to do it, in a lot of cases, many of us might be later bloomers than others. Many of us have gone through near-death experiences that cause us to begin to see things in different ways. And I think that generationally we have a new world order appearing upon us, and that's the way I see it. I may be all wet behind the ears, but I really think that all these things that we do by understanding our background, our ancestral history, breaking down those barriers, and allowing the next generations, these younger generations, to get involved and to understand that their lives will be a whole lot more freer, and in some cases, more tolerant and more understanding.
Well, I think it's exciting. I mean, the fact that someone can communicate with someone halfway around the world, and so in terms of breaking down barriers between people, I think this is an exciting time. One of the things, the disadvantages I think the kind of younger people have is their lack of connection to nature. And that not understanding and being a part of the cycles of nature, because they're sitting in front of the computer or text messaging or calling, or they go from their box house with the air conditioning into their box car with the air conditioning or the heating, and then into the box garage, up the box elevator, into their box office, and then back again, and looking at the box, the computer. So I think there's an alienation from the natural cycles, and I think eventually that's going to you know, create even more imbalance in terms of our environment, but in terms of humanity and connecting with others and seeing the other points of view and breaking down barriers between people and culture and religions, I think this new generation it's exciting. It's exciting what the potential is.
Well, and even some of those of us in this, in our generations, I mean, if you look at the numbers on Facebook these days, I mean, it's they. I've seen it, you know, reported that it's you know, it's turned gray, and that there are probably more of us middle-aged baby boomers who've taken over Facebook in the last 6 months to a year from the kids. And now we're going through this stuff. I mean, this is addictive. And, you know, even the social network that I created back in the early 90s was addictive to so many people, and we found ourselves just stuck behind a computer. And, you know, you have your ranch, and you know, I do, believe it or not, I sometimes don't get a chance to listen to your radio show on Hay House, but I do have, all the podcasts, and one of the things that I do every night is I pick a show, and it's so funny that one of the shows seem to mirror what it is I need at that particular time, and that's how I spend my last hour of the day. And I know that a couple months ago you have a new rooster.
I know, Bogart.
Yes.
I love Bogart. My daughter was saying last night, she said, you know, Mom, I think he needs to have a longer name because he's such a majestic rooster. Bogart isn't quite enough. Okay. We have to come up with a longer name. I said, how about Humphrey? She goes, no, been taken.
Right.
God.
But, you know, it is interesting, and I think some of us, all of us need to, get back into spending some time with nature. I mean, I don't know how much time you spend. I know I've been trying a lot more weather. I'm a water and a beach person and a sailor and a boater. So my nature things are on the water, in the water, something to do with water, and not so much on land because I have a bad knee and I don't like to walk much, or I can't walk much without, you know, having some discomfort. So, when we go back to our ancestral patterns and we go back these multiple generations, I mean, most of them, if you trace in the U.S., a lot of farmers, a lot of people who tilled the land, worked the land, families stayed together because they worked the land together. And, you know, I think that this point that you brought up is very important, actually, and I think to more of us than we might want be readily willing to admit. So if we were going to change our lives, I mean, how much time should we spend, you know, just kind of getting back to nature?
You know, I don't know that there's a specific amount of time. I just, you know, there was this really interesting research done in a hospital with, because they wanted to see what effect does nature have on people. So they worked with people recovering from appendicitis operation.
Yeah.
And there's a certain number of days that it takes someone to heal after they've had their appendix out. So they divided this research group into four different groups. The first group was just a normal hospital room and the normal after the appendicitis operation. The second group of patients were put into a hospital room with a window that looked out into nature. The third group of patients was put into a room with a picture of nature, and the fourth group was put in a room with a painting of modern art. The people in the first, I guess the standard group, or I forgot what that's called, the control group, there was no difference in the number of days it took to heal. The group that had the window out to nature healed substantially faster than the control group. What was interesting was the third group that had the picture of nature, they healed as fast as the people with the window out to nature, and the people with the modern art, well, they were there forever, so it must have been kind of chaotic modern art. But what I thought was interesting was that you don't, I mean, ideally it's great to be out in nature, but not everybody can do that. Either, you know, they have limited mobility, like you mentioned yourself, or for one reason or the other, they can't. But simply bringing the feeling of nature into a home, for example, can make a big difference. Simply having not a window out to nature, and not everyone's so fortunate, but having a painting or a photo of nature seems to have a beneficial effect. So, you know, if you can get out, and now there's all this research about vitamin D, and I'm thinking, well, duh, I mean, it's the sun, but we've spent so much time covering ourselves up from the sun that we forgot that this also is a very healing aspect of just being out in nature. I don't know if you've heard of all that amazing research about vitamin D being the wonder drug.
Yes.
So basically, as soon as you're out in the sun for 10 minutes, you have manufactured enough vitamin D for the day. But
I do love the sun and I do love the outdoors. And, you know, I'm sitting here at my breakfast room table with my laptop that has a very beautiful view of my swimming pool and greenery that's actually turning a little brown because of the Texas heat.
Well, you know, brown is the new green. That's the big code word. So, because we're conserving water. So there you go.
And I've been wondering for a while why I seem to tend to gravitate here rather than to my office, which does not have my window to the world. And it's very interesting. I have been here for almost 2 years working from this exact spot, and I have a room in the front of the house with not as big of a picture window area where I just I can't seem to find my way there.
That sounds beautiful.
It is beautiful. I mean, I love it, and I have a lot of my big action for yesterday was I saved a butterfly. He landed in my pool, and he was drowning, and I happened to see him, and I scooped him out and let him be, and I went back and checked on him, and he had flown away. So, I am a nature lover of sorts. I just, going out. I have no woods and that whole walking thing, but we do have beaches, and we do have, lakes and bays and Hurricane Ikes and.
I feel so ignorant when you went Texas and beaches. I'm like, beaches in Texas? Years and years ago when I first went to Hawaii when I was, in my late teens, I thought everyone was going to be living on the beach in grass shacks, and I got there and there were sky rises, and I'm like, oh my God, I thought everyone was so. Of course, there's the ocean in Texas. I always think of Texas as like that stereotypical, like cattle and vast
farmland, ranch land, yes.
Ranch land, yes.
Yeah. No, we live upon one of the, a beautiful Gulf Coast. Just seems to be very prone to storms. But, it is actually a beautiful, beautiful place for most of the year.
Sounds wonderful. It's like people think of California. I'll run into people that go, yeah, that's where all those nutcakes live. All the weirdos live. It's like, actually, it's a pretty big state, and there's all different kinds of people that live here.
and speaking of geography and where we live, it's one of the interesting features of doing genealogy is tracing the geographical patterns and immigration patterns of people. And this case I was working on, one that I'm working on right now, they started in Kentucky, ended up in Arkansas, in Alexandria, Louisiana, and over into Magnolia, Texas. And, and this was in a period between 1810 and 1870. And, it's very interesting to try to figure out, why they moved, and why they took the pattern, the migration pattern. And, so we have some Kentuckians that ended up in Texas. So, and that's the way it always has been, and especially with the migration west during the gold rush years, which is probably how a lot of families ended up in California. As the United States spread its wings, it's, as a genealogist, it's just very, very interesting to figure out, what prompted someone to move from Kentucky to Louisiana, for example.
Yeah. And I find it fascinating to hear so many stories of people who will have done something and they find out later, in terms of space, they would have gone someplace and they found out later that that's where their ancestors lived, but they had no conscious way of knowing it. Like my husband was had moved up into Washington State and was working remodeling houses. Well, long after he had done that, he found out through some genealogy research that his great-great-grandfather, which he had never known this before, lived in Washington State and did remodeling in houses, and he was remodeling in the same area and the same kind of houses that David was. So it's those kind of things you hear all the time, and it's like, I think it's fascinating that people will find themselves in the same place without ever known that their relatives lived there or their ancestors lived there, and then they'll find out later. So it's almost like that there's a residual of the spirit in the land that seems to pull us to those places where our ancestors once lived.
Well, I'm raising my hand. I'm one of them. I
yes.
had no idea my family lived in Texas until I started my genealogy research. I thought they were in Chicago and New Orleans.
Wow.
And I found them in Houston, and I also found them in Galveston, and I'm living halfway in between.
That's
it is
so
fascinating.
Interesting. It's like there's a bit of ourselves there in a way, and it calls us to it or something. I don't quite know how it works, but I do know it works.
It is very interesting because you know, when I first started researching, it was 27 years ago, and I found one side of my family in Houston. I mean, I was just, oh my God, they were right here. I'm right here. It was really taken aback, and, you know, my father didn't know, and, I mean, it was, you know, there was a period of time, I think, where you know, information just wasn't passed down in the same way that it was prior to, and I think people in my generation have really had to struggle to, you know, to get to some of this information, because it just hasn't always been passed down as one would have liked. And
yeah.
One of the other things that I've noticed too, and I mean, I really, really think, and I mean, I'd love to do some testing on this, is that I think that you know, the dead end patterns aren't really dead ends at all. I think it's our calling to look within to find something that we need to know.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and I think there's a reason why someone gets called a genealogy too, that maybe there's some, I don't know, it's like a jigsaw puzzle and there's some parts missing. And I've known people that they always felt like there's something missing. And as soon as they started the genealogy research, and I don't know that it's for everybody, but the people who get called to it, it's like somehow those missing parts of the jigsaw puzzle of their life start falling into place, and they get a sense of belonging almost, or a sense of completion. So I think it's a hallowed and sacred pathway.
And I think, too, it's a sense of being and who you are. Yeah, I know that my awakening, I was such a late bloomer. I don't even want to go there. And how I saw the world and pictured the world and how I fit into the world, and just very, very late bloomer. And I know that once I started this research, it was just a whole, you know, it was like a coming out party. And how I saw things and how I viewed things and how I saw myself. And, you know, I wonder, you know, in some cases, you know, why it took that to get me from there to here. And why I was so single-minded, single-focused, and living in, I mean, I call it a fog. I don't know where I was.
Mm.
And, I mean, you know, I just, it very, very interesting. And, I mean, I think that so many of us in parts of our lives, you know, find ourselves in a place where, you know, we're not connected. And maybe that's what it is. It's all of a sudden you become connected with your past. You become connected with yourself. And
yeah.
You become connected with your future. You know, I mean, have you done any genealogy research at all, personally?
No, not specifically. And I mean, I've done back just a few generations, but...
Yes.
But it's something I've been thinking... My life is so full, but I'm thinking, you know, because I think you have to pay a fee or something. Is it Ancestry.com?
Yes.
Is that, and they'll research it back. They're fairly good. Is that what?
Well, they have quite a bit of information, and I just actually had our last week's guest was from Ancestry.com, and you know, they are constantly putting new information online, and you know, whether or not the information is what you need to fulfill your research, you know, remains to be seen. But you know,
would you call them the best resource? Do you think they're the best resource out there?
They are probably have the most information from the genealogical research of the United States, but there are, you know, footnote.com is doing quite a lot. The there's a lot of information out there, and you just have to piece it all together, and it depends on, you know, what exactly you know where your research really is. You know, one of the things that you can't really say there's one single source, and Ancestry is probably the biggest source, but there are other sources where I have gone to find information that, you know, was not on Ancestry. So, you know, it's really a matter of determining what it is you want to do and your goals. And, you know, I will say that Ancestry does have a new program up that's called Expert Connect, of which I am participating as a researcher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, designed to help people who are just getting started to work with professionals either on a, you know, full custom research project or just as a more or less a consultant. And I've been doing, interestingly enough, I'm in 2 weeks that it's been up, I'm on my fourth or fifth project, and I'm really enjoying this. I didn't think I would, because it's not something I have really done at this level, other than, you know, helping people do their own research. But I've been finding it very rewarding, not only from my perspective, but from the user's perspective, and trying to get them going. Because a lot of people don't know where to start, and that's really the key to this whole project is knowing where to start and knowing where to go to start, and then moving on from there. So it's very interesting, but this is actually, I think, a very exciting project for people who want to get started, is to put a project on and try to find somebody that you're comfortable working with that can maybe help you get going and can guide you in the direction that you need to go. And I wasn't planning to give an Ancestry.com plug again, but, you know, they're there and they do a good job. And what can I say?
Well, anyone would be lucky to work with you. It sounds like you do a really good job and you take the work. Yeah, seriously.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, like I said, I've done a lot of research, and I've helped a lot of people, but I've never really done it at the level that is being called on with this project. And I'm actually tickled to death, and I'm enjoying it and fine-tuning some of my skills, so, you know, might as well. I think our time is up. I have enjoyed this to no end. Absolutely. I really think that the more people connect to the past, the more that they are going to find a very new and bright future, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think I would not want to be alive at any other time in history. I think this is the absolute best.
I agree. In any event, I thank you so much, Denise, for sharing this hour with me and with our listeners, and we will next week be focused on immigration records. I have as my guest Peg Zicka with the Ellis Island Foundation, and that's a whole other interesting ballywick of research to get involved in. And this is Susan King, and where genealogy and spirit connect. Denise's website is www.deniselynn.com. My website is www.susaneking.com. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Good night.